T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The McNeil and Parkin Show.
This is real radio.
On 670 The Score.
Let's say hello to our play-by-play team. Here's Tom Doerr and Johnny Redker. Gentlemen.
All right, thank you, Steve Cashel.
Set the screen for Jordan. Can't get it to him. Now he's got it. Right side. 6 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's fly. Sunday! Yeah, that's Sunday! Bulls win again! What a shot! Michael Jordan does it in Cleveland again!
Blocked by Horace. Bounces. Myers cross court. Scotty!
Oh, and he went right over the top of him.
And Scotty got a team. Scotty said something to him.
Pippen gets it to Jordan. Michael challenges and slams.
Look at his tongue out over Alonzo Mourning. Yes!
It is a two-point Pacer lead with 0.8 of a second. So you got to catch it and shoot it. Tony got it. Put it up. Look out.
He got it! Tony Kukoc, listen to this crowd.
They are going as nuts as we are.
No shot. The Chicago Bulls have finished the regular season where they've had such a great year on the road. The Bulls finished the regular season 72 wins, just 10 losses on the year. Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls now will move on to the playoffs. A ball club that set NBA history.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on The Score.
Man, talk about sports as a time machine. That was reliving my childhood in many, many ways. I am really excited to welcome on our next guest. He was the voice of 5 of the 6 Bulls championships. You will see and hear him, I'm sure, all over The Last Dance, the story, the Bulls documentary of the Jordan era and the last run in particular. That has been moved up to April 19th for its debut with ESPN. So everyone is telling 90s Bulls stories. No one better to do it than the man who was behind the mic, like I said, for 5 of the 6. Tom Doerr with us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Tom, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
Oh, Danny, I'm great. Thank you. I really appreciate the chance to come on and relive some of those great memories. And I, as you were playing those clips, I could see the plays. And that second one, when Pip dunked over Pat Ewing and then stood over him and got the technical, that was just kind of a coming of age of that Bulls group. It's like, do you think we're done without Michael? We ain't done, Housefly.
Tom, great to have you on board today. And I'm trying to think who we have to give attribution to for the highlights. Would that be courtesy of Sports Vision, Sports Channel? I mean, that's the Wayback Machine. I get a kick out of hearing any highlight with Horace Grant in it. I want to ask you a question about what it was like touring with the Bulls, if you will, and that is, how mindful of at the time were you of the bigness of what that team you were describing was accomplishing?
Well, I came in my first year. I was the backup radio guy. JD and Red, Jim Durham and Red Kerr were the main team. But when they were on Channel 9, they would get a radio backup. So John Rooney was that guy. Runes was going to the White Sox, was their White Sox for spring training, and he called me and he said, hey, look, they're looking for somebody to do like 5, 6, 7 games as they get down the stretch, and so send me a tape. So I sent him a tape, And I did, I don't know, five or six games that first year on radio of the first championship season. And my first game was at Detroit. And so this is, you know, I'm going into the snake pit, right? But it was me and Tommy Bohrwinkle. We had a blast. We bonded from, we met at the airport, took a cab to the hotel. We bonded immediately. Tommy B was the best. And so that was my you know, kind of introduction was that game. And so to understand who these guys were, how focused they were, and that was the thing that I think impressed me from the start, was once they got to the arena, you know, on the bus or something like that, they could relax, have fun on the plane. But once they got to the arena, it was all business. They put away any cell phones, back then that was a new thing. But nothing else interfered with what they were doing, either at practice or at games. And they knew how important everything was that they did.
Tom, the answer to this question can't be Michael Jordan. Can't say MJ. Which Bull did you admire the most and why?
Oh, gosh. I think Scotty, the year that Michael left for the whole year, what he did to really take over reins of that team and become the man. I think Pip at that time. But go back to the beginning, and Bobby Hansen and Cliff Levingston, guys that came off the bench and didn't play much, but in that series against, I think it was Portland, they come off the bench in a game where the Bulls were down big, and their defense and making passes and making plays, not just scoring points, but what they did. So those guys at the end of the bench were a big key. Bill Winnington, the year that Luke Longley got hurt and Billy had to come in and play. So his first real test of fire is at Houston against Hakeem Olajuwon. And I remember talking, I think it was on the score, but I remember talking to somebody that day and them saying how Billy was going to get toasted. Billy brought something different. He could make that outside jump shot, that 15, 17 footer. And I think he ended up with 19, 20, 21 points that night. And I remember talking to him afterwards, and he wasn't thrilled for himself. He was thrilled to make a contribution to a win for that team. That those kind of guys are the ones that, you know, the guys that came off the bench, Judd Bushler, mm-hmm. You know, down the line, those guys that didn't play a lot, but when they played, realized how important it was.
Tom, did they enjoy it? I know there was fun and partying on the side, but the pressure of it at the end, what this documentary is going to cover, did they actually enjoy it at the end?
I think there were times to enjoy it, yeah. Again, this was a job, and the thing that I hope comes out is how tough it was to be a Bull at that time. You had to have a skin, because not only were, you know, if you had a turnover and lost a game, you could get roasted in the media, but you get roasted by Michael. And if Michael was coming after you because of something you did, and I saw a few times when he did go after people on his own team, you had to have the ability to stand up and say, okay, yeah, you're right, I made a mistake, but I'm coming right back at whatever it was. And if you didn't have that, come on, I've got this, I can do this. If you didn't have that mentality, you didn't make it very long in Chicago.
When you talk about Michael Jordan and his insane competitiveness, what's the first story you tell?
Maybe the NCAA tournament late. I won it 1 year. I had a great start, won it 1 year. And then I think Neil Funk won it the next year. I can't remember. But anyway, so I won it 1 year, and I put the money in my pocket and waved to Mike and said thanks. And that was always a good idea. That certainly stirred him up. But then Neil won it the next year, and I think I came in second or third and got some money and said thanks again. So then the next year, he put 10 entries, and somebody else won, and I came in third again. So I came in the money 3 years in a row. And then the next year, I think he put like 15 or 20 entries and won it. But, you know, there's the LeBradford Smith story when LeBradford Smith had a big night for the – might have been the Bullets then. Could have been the Wizards. I don't remember. Against Mike. And so we're on the plane going to Washington. It's a back-to-back. And LeBradford Smith was – oh, he was having so much fun. I don't remember how many points he got, 25, 27, whatever it was. And Michael sat across from me on the plane. And so – He came up to get something to eat or something like that. And I said, how you doing? And he said, just said first half. And I said, I understood. I understood exactly what he meant. And I said, are you sure? So what he meant was he was going to get as many as the kid got in the game in the first half against him. And so, I mean, he was out for blood. The Orlando series, after Orlando beat the Bulls, when he came back, that year that he came back, that really bothered him. You know, he put on 23 to try and win the series. So that really bothered him. We go there, and I remember him before, I think it was game four. And again, I'm not looking at any stats or anything like that, Danny. But I think it was game four at Orlando where he, I mean, it was just an exclamation point. He got like 44, 45, something like that. And it was just his way of saying, all hope is lost. You have no chance to win even a game. He wanted that Orlando series probably more than any other early series, and he wanted to do it in a way that showed Orlando that he still remembered that loss the year before.
Our guest, the former television voice of the champion, the multi-champion Chicago Bulls, Tom Doerr, is with us on the McNeil and Parkin Show on the Score. Michael didn't like Jerry Krause. He was the one who gave him the nickname Crumbs for the crumbs that would appear on his shirt from his many snacks. Michael wanted to be the general manager early in his career. He was convinced Walter Davis, if you didn't get him, you'd never win an NBA title. And then there was the drama, Tom, of Phil Jackson doing annual deals. Organizations, you know, build dynasties. They clawed, you know, they poked back at the players. How could that acrimony have been avoided?
Oh, I have no idea. That's way above what I knew about. But the thing that I do know is that year in and year out, that was a great team that was on the floor. And, you know, from Michael to, like I said, Cliff Levingston, Bobby Hansen, John Paxson, guys that maybe weren't the stars, but did exactly what their jobs were to, as I mentioned, Judd Bushler, Bill Wennington, guys that came in with a role and really played a part in the championship. So I understand that there was at least some acrimony. I stayed way away from all of that. But as far as how it could have been avoided, no clue, and I'm not going there on that one.
It's a fair way to try. After all these years, you'd think the statute of limitations would be up. Tom, some of the stories that came out after the fact, you know, Michael would gamble on what whose luggage came off the airplane first, but then he would pay off the baggage handler to make sure that his bags came off first. Or, you know,
It gets better than that. We bet. I had a digital watch, right? So I'm the one that would keep this. What time we took off, wheels up, you'd hit the button, and then what time we touched down. I'm sure that he was paying the pilot to slow down the plane because he won. I mean, whose car would be in the first spot? You'd bet on anything. Now, I couldn't get in the big games, right? You know, if they're betting $2,000, $5,000, something like that, TV announcer's not going to get in that game. But Yeah, I mean, you bet on anything. But, yeah, absolutely. He would his whole goal at whatever it was to win. And no matter what it was, his goal was to make you nervous about losing, whether it was playing golf or whatever it was. And so, yeah, that's all he wanted to do was win.
Tom, but how so much... Go ahead, Danny.
When these stories come out after the fact, and it's like, oh, yeah, he was paying off the pilot, or he was paying off the baggage handler, or B.J. Armstrong telling us about, like, oh, yeah, he was the house in blackjack. Like, did you guys know at the time that not only was he gambling, but he was cheating? I feel like that must have come up at some point.
Well, again, I didn't get into those games. I knew what was going on. On the plane, here's the story. This is what B.J. was talking about. So... It's a four-seat area on the plane, right? And it was Harp, Pip, Michael, and then the fish. So, and the fish was going to get caught. And Mac, I can hear your laugh. I'm glad you're on. Good to hear you, partner. So if you didn't know who the fish was, you were the fish. And you can see the three piranhas swimming around you, waiting for to close your eyes or whatever, because they're going to strike. And it was so interesting. Jack Haley was the fish for a while, and they let Jack, those three piranhas led him on. And then we were going on the first leg of the West Coast trip. And so the meal money is, whatever it was, $100 a day, and you're gone for 2.5 weeks. There's a lot of meal money there. I think Jack was looking for money by the time the plane landed. I don't think Jack had any meal money left. And, it was those kind of things. These guys were so good at what they did and won at everything they did. But, yeah, if you didn't know who the fish was and you were sitting there, you were the fish. Scotty Burrell was the fish for a while. Yeah, yeah. And you were going to get reeled in.
Tom, you grew up in Chicagoland. You played high school ball in the Western Burbs. What did it mean to you to be the voice of the six-time world champion Bulls, 5 as a full-time announcer? What did that mean to you as a Chicagoan?
When, Matt, you'll probably remember this. When J.D. left, there were two known candidates or three, whatever it was, and there was this mystery candidate. And every once in a while, there'd be a story about the mystery candidate did this or the mystery candidate knew that or something like that. And so I'd talk to my mom all the time, and she'd tell there was something in the Tribune about the mystery candidate. Because we always wondered, what was the story? And since I did a couple games on the radio, I thought, maybe I'd get a chance at one of the jobs. And so Kevin Harlan, good friend of mine, love Kevin. Kevin was doing Missouri before me and was at KCMO in Kansas City before I was. And so Kevin was going up to interview for that job, for the TV job within Sports Channel Chicago. And Kevin used me as a reference. And so the phone rings right after Kevin's interview. And I didn't even let the guy's name was John Toohey. I didn't even let John get much out. And I said, well, let me tell you about Kevin and what a great guy he is. And I sold Kevin for a minute and a half or whatever, and the guy's laughing. And so I said, okay, I'll bite. What's going on here? And he says, well, Kevin just left, and he's not going to get the job. And I said, okay, why are you calling me? And seriously, that's exactly what I said and probably how I said it. And he said, well, we wondered if you'd be interested in applying for the job. And I said to John, seriously, am I this mystery fourth candidate or whatever it was? And he said, yes, you've been that guy all along. You could have blown me over with a feather to come back home with my mom, my brother, so many high school buddies of mine, grade school buddies of mine, and to be able to be a part of that was as big a thrill, aside from kids being born, getting married and all that, as big a thrill as anybody could have ever imagined. And to be in the middle of it every day, no matter what was going on, was a thrill. To come on the Score and talk about, the third string center and how he fit in, that's the kind of thing that I mean, I grew up living for that stuff. So for me, this was a dream come true. And, you know, maybe three dreams to come true all at the same time.
That's great stuff. We're talking to Tom Doerr, the voice of five of the six Bulls titles here as we're telling 90 Bulls stories during our Score Stories segment, McNeil and Parkins on the Score. If I'm going to tell you, you know, I want to hear a story of celebrity around those teams, whether it's Rodman craziness or Pippen and Madonna or presidential interactions, like the craziest, oh my God, I can't believe I'm witnessing this celebrity thing happen around the 90s Bulls. What story does Tom Doerr go to?
Jeez. You know, is it Obama coming to a game? Is it Madonna or Carmen Electra or, you know, right down the line? I guess it would be President Obama coming to a Bulls game. I think that probably topped everybody. But, you know, sitting talking to Carmen Electra about flying in and, you know, seeing Dennis and, you know, her rolling her eyes at half the stuff. It was, I guess, the best way, and Mac, I think you and I have talked about this one before, it was the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and, you know, pick three or four more great rock and roll bands, The Who and, you know, whatever, all put together for every night, absolutely every night. Remember the when they were going to win the 70th game, going up to Milwaukee, and the helicopters are following the bus.
Yes.
Johnny and I are with Neil Funk and with Wennington. We're driving up listening to this, and we're dying laughing. It's a bus going to a game. And the helicopters are following it all. It looks like there's a little accident up in front of them. You know, it's a bus going to a game, dude. But that was it. It was that big.
They're approaching Kenosha. Those are, yeah, that really was Hillbilly Town with skyscrapers personified. But, yeah, we always likened it to covering a rock band. They'd come back from the morning shoot-around. I remember seeing in Seattle and Salt Lake City 500 fans waiting outside just to get a peek at them. They're not going to get anywhere near them to get an autograph, just to get a look at Michael Jordan and the Bulls. There'd be 500 people outside in the lobby of the hotel.
We're in Salt Lake City. And it's Thanksgiving Day, and we are bored, all of us are bored to tears. It's Thanksgiving Day. There's nothing to do, and we got a day off. So we're all eating turkey and all that stuff, and Michael comes over, and he says to me and Red, what are you guys going to do? And I said, let's go see a movie. And he said, I can't go see a movie. I said, Mike, it's Thanksgiving Day. The Mormons will hate you tomorrow. And he starts laughing. He liked that. He did like that. And so he said, okay, let's get the paper and look and see what movies are playing, which, of course, is what you did back in the day. So we get the movies and Casino's playing. Well, he really wanted to see Casino. So we go to Casino, and it's me, Michael, Bill Wennington, Johnny Kerr, Michael's security guy. There's probably 8-9 of us, something like that. We get there. There's no one else there. Nobody to see any of the other movies. No one. There's a guy taking tickets and the guy selling popcorn. That's it. We walk in and we're the only ones there. We sit where we want. We laugh and laugh. We make fun of everybody in the movie. We have a blast, right? Absolutely. This was Michael being able to just be one of the guys. And so we watch the movie. We get ready to leave. You know, the movie ends, and Michael looks at me, and he says, all right, here's your job. You go out there, and you tell me how many thousands of people there are. I said, Mike, it's Thanksgiving Day. Mormons don't want to see you on Thanksgiving. He gives me one of those Michael looks like, I told you what to do. So, okay, all right, I'll play along. I walk out there. I'm telling you, there had to be 3,000 people. Easy. 3,000 people. You could just see both of those guys as soon as we went in to sit down. They're picking up the phone, dialing all their friends. Hey, guess who's here? Hey, guess who's here? Hey, guess who's here? There had to be easily 3,000 people. And so I walk out and say, okay, is there like a back way out of there? We knew there had to be. The guys all said no because they wanted us to walk in front of their friends. So it was like a heavyweight fighter coming out through the crowd, you know, with us kind of in the ring group around him, and we're running. And finally we get, you know, for 30 or 40 steps. He pushes me out of the way and just runs the rest of the way back to the hotel. We get back to the hotel, and he said, I told you there was going to be all those people there. I said, Mike, we had a blast. We got to see a movie. And finally he said, yeah, okay, you have a point. I've never been able to do that in 15 years or whatever it was. But that's the kind of draw he had wherever we went. And he just wanted to be one of the guys. And he was a great one of those guys type of people to be around.
It's hard to imagine him in that setting of just being one of the guys. Like it was easy for him to turn it on and off like that?
Oh, yeah. He truly wanted to be just another guy, as long as we weren't betting on anything. He was great. But, no matter where we went, he truly just wanted to relax and have fun. He was as good a teammate as you could ever want. As long as you were given 100% in practice and doing what you needed to do, he was an awesome teammate. If you weren't, let's say you were a first teamer, he would switch jerseys with the guy guarding him, go to the second team, and then guard you and beat the hell out of you. And so that's where he got to be a difficult teammate. And I bet, I don't know this, but I would guess there's going to be some of that in this series where they show how difficult a teammate he could be. You had to be a special type of player to be able to be in practice and in games with Michael, because he was going to let you know that you had to play hard. He wouldn't tell you what to do, but you had to play hard.
Tom, today would have been Norm Van Leer's birthday. I think he would have been 72. He'll always be my favorite Bull. Weirdly, he died on the same day as your former partner, Johnny Red Kerr, 11 years ago this past February. I wonder, and I know Bulls fans would love to hear you talk about this, how much you miss Big Red, how many times you've wanted to pick up the phone over the last 11 years to catch up with him, only to realize, man, he's been gone a while now. I bet it still happens.
Yeah, it when I go fishing or play golf, he was my fishing buddy, he was my golfing partner. So we'd go to breakfast, it was me and Johnny and Neil. We'd go to lunch, me and Johnny and Neil, and then usually Bill Winnington once he joined the group. Dinner, the night before the game. Wherever we were together, and we were doing something and laughing. We went to... We're in San Francisco, so we go to the pier, and you know, see all the crazy people and the whole bit. So, Johnny goes up, and there's a mime there that Johnny thinks is a statue. So he's making faces at the statue, and he's I mean, it was really, really funny because me, Neil, and Billy knew that it was a statue. I mean, that it was a mime. Johnny thought it was a statue. So when the guy moved and looked at him and said, boo, I swear to you, Red never jumped that high when he played in the NBA or played at Illinois. he's a, whatever he was, 71, 72, whatever he was, year old man who loved every single day of his life. There were two things he wanted on his tombstone. First was that he just ran out of gas or something like that. But the one that eventually made it he insisted the closer he got to dying, the more insistent he got with me and with his daughter, Essie, was, I told you my feet were killing me. And that is, if you ever go to his gravestone, I think it's in Mount Carmel, and see him, go to his gravesite. That's what's on his gravestone. Wow. He wanted that. He wanted the last lap of his life. It was really important to him.
Tom, I could do this all day. I can't believe we haven't had you on the show before this because, you know, I was born in 86, and that second three-peat, that was the team that honestly made me fall in love with sports. So if I wasn't at the game, I was watching you on the call of the game. So I've had a big smile on my face this entire time. Thank you for being so generous with your time and your stories, and we'll have to do it again soon. Thank you.
Always glad to, and hopefully Matt gets the connection and can stay on next time. Because I'd love to swap some fishing stories with my buddy. But Danny, glad to. And Chicago, I hope things are great. And hope to talk to you guys again soon.
Thanks, Tom. Take care, bud. We appreciate it.
You got it. Thank you.
Thank you. That is Tom Doerr on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. You and Tom Doerr ever go fishing together, man?
We've never fished together. I think he thinks we sound exactly alike on the radio.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing.
I'm trying to figure out what's going on this end, and I suspect that's the case, man.
Yeah, we've been trading them. We've been going toe-to-toe and trading them, I think, pretty much the entire run. But that's cool. No, but I'd love to set a hook with Big Tom. Six feet away.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
six feet away.
That's very responsible. Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Athletics. The Wildcats would like to thank all of those working throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, including postal workers, CTA staff, and airport staff. We appreciate you. Score stories. We launched it for these Score and Teen shows where you just bring people on to tell stories. Tom Doerr, an absolute hit. Tom Thayer will have great 85 Bears and more stories coming up at 5 o'clock. But everyone's going to be coming out of the woodwork with 90s Bulls stories in the documentary and leading up to the documentary. Some of them are going to be gold, and some of them are not, and they're going to be left on the cutting room floor. We have a couple of cutting room floor Bulls 90s stories from this station.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Axed on the score.
What time is it?
My mentality was to go out and win at any cost.
Jordan is the most talented player in the NBA by far.
The show of the 90s, the team of the 90s.
How you feeling?
Whenever they speak Michael Jordan, they should speak Scottie Pippen.
We created an image that people want to live up to. I think that's all you can hope for.
Little bit of chills there, Tanny. We're going to be getting lots of 90s Bulls stories the next, 10 weeks or so, April 19th, so 18 days from now. The Last Dance documentary begins, but, man, with no sports, everyone's going to be coming out of the woodwork to tell 90s Bulls stories, Mac.
I'm looking forward to it because the Bulls provided us with enormously juicy content for almost a decade, and I'm always grateful for content, and was so happy for the people who were ardent fans. Not the Johnny Come Latelys, the people who had fresh tags on their Bulls hats, but people who went there back in the day when they were real lousy and were part of small crowds that used to gather at Chicago Stadium when Pat Williams, the PR director, was outside before tip-off giving away tickets to anybody who wanted to come in and just get warm. Those were the Bulls fans I was happiest for, not those kids in the back of a big BMW 7 Series heading down the Edens.
Thanks. So there are going to be a lot of stories that are on the cutting room floor that aren't going to make it into the documentary. And Les Grobstein, he's going to be there. He's going to be in The Last Dance. He is going to be all over this doc. I don't know if Grobber will be in it more or if Bernsey will be in it more. I assume Bernsey will be all over it. Bruce Levine is going to be in it. It's going to be fun to see the media guys from yesteryear, from your era. But apparently he's been telling some Bulls stories on the air, Les Grobstein has, and he started, I'm not sure if his version will make the doc, but his version of the Hugh Hollins story.
Is it time to forgive Hugh Hollins?
Never. And besides, he wouldn't know if you did forgive him because he's dead.
That's true.
She'll laugh at that, but okay, I'm sorry.
He's one of the most arrogant people ever. A year after it happened, when he returned to the United Center the first time, and he called three fouls on Scottie Pippen in the first, 2 to 3 minutes of the game. It was absolutely ridiculous. And prior to that game, he asked one of the security people, who, by the way, is a guy who's no longer alive, I know also, he says, is Melissa Isaacson working tonight? And he said, yeah, she's here. He says, will you tell her to come down here to my office? I got something to give her some information. So Melissa goes down the hall to the official's locker room and thought she might get something interesting. As soon as Holland sees her, he starts cussing her out a big time, screaming. You could probably hear her all the way up in Evanston, maybe up in Milwaukee, was screaming so loud. And finally she says, I don't have to put up with your crap. And she turned around and head down the hallway. Some female that was with Hugh Hollins, I don't know if it was his wife, a girlfriend or whatever, she starts cussing at her. And she said, I don't have to put up with you for sure, and walked away. It turned out Rod Thorne, former Bulls GM, the guy who originally drafted Michael Jordan, he had to finally send a letter apologizing to Melissa because he was working for the NBA by that time. And had to apologize. And Hugh Hollins never apologized for anything. He was just an arrogant, pompous jerk.
Wow.
Man.
I mean, you'd think that 6 championships you'd get over a bad call in the 94 season. But
Les is a guy who takes his sports very, very seriously and is never going to forgive the man for that. And even if you did, it wouldn't matter because he's dead. Yeah, that's a boy. Ask a guy what time it is, and he tells you how to build a watch.
He holds his sports grudges. He hates everybody from the state of Wisconsin. Uh-huh. He's mad at extending hands to teammates to pick him up off the floor.
That's one of his. Yes, that's probably among his top 5 pet peeves. You never pick up an opponent when he's on the field. I don't care if you were his teammate or not. It's bull.
Go to hell. Get out of here. We don't need you here.
And people who do the wave, he hates the wave.
Robot umpire advocates.
Yes, and I mean hates. He gets mad. You can hear the anger in his voice. That's real. That's not just a radio persona. He takes his sports that seriously. It's that important to him.
Yeah, he still uses... 26 years later, he's mad about the call. And you know what?
I am so glad I'm not like him.
Yeah. I'm with you. You'd think, like they say, time heals all wounds. I guess not.
Nope.
I feel so liberated. I am free of grudges against officials from decades ago. Wow.
Yeah, that play literally more than a quarter century ago. But that was a pretty good story from Les on Hugh Hollins, a personal interaction on a famous 90s Bulls story, the Phantom Call, 94 playoffs, Bulls-Knicks, Hugh Hollins, Scottie Pippen. That was good, coherent, behind-the-scenes story. He was then asked for one of his favorite stories from that era of the Bulls, and I guess it maybe wasn't as direct.
What jumps to mind when you think of the 1998 Bulls?
The last shot that he ever hit to beat Utah. We were out there in Salt Lake City, and at that point, if they would have lost, there would have been Game 7. This was on a Sunday night. If they would have lost, there would have been a game a few days later on a Wednesday, and we would have been stuck there. And all the flights the next day were booked solid. So what ends up happening, Jordan hits the shot, And I turned around, and one of our guys who we all know pretty well, he's a part-time reporter named Bob Newsom. He was sitting next to me. And then after the shot by John Stockton was partially tipped by Ron Harper, and it was over and the Bulls got another championship, I turned around to Bob Newsom and I said, "Let's get the hell out of here. Let's go home." He goes, "You're right." And we got dirty looks from some of the Salt Lake City and some of the Utah media. And then we got the hell out of there and started to head downstairs. But the first thing I did before we went down, we knew that the NBA would keep the locker room closed for at least 15 minutes because they wanted the NBC people to have exclusive coverage of anybody in the locker room. This was before they really started doing everything outside. At times they did it on the table. You might remember at the United Center when they beat Portland. But the bottom line is I got on the phone immediately, called United, and I said, "I got to get out of here in the morning, blah, 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 and I'm a gold member." So they said, "Well, can you connect?" I said, "Just get me out of here." And they connected me through from Salt Lake City to Denver, and then changed planes to come into Chicago. And it turned out, another reporter colleague of ours that was a good friend of ours, Cheryl Ray, was there. She wanted to come home too, but she did not even have a reservation. And so we both went out to the airport early the next morning together. And when we get to United, they just put her on the flight, even though she didn't have a reservation. What they did was they initially connected us to go from Salt Lake to San Francisco and then into O'Hare. But then they said, "No, we'll put you guys through Denver." And they put us in first class. And
nice.
Not only that, they gave both of us a $700 voucher. I got some incredible dirty looks there at the airport. I'm thinking, this is really awesome. I said, "A Chicago team has just done all this, and these people in Salt Lake, they're frustrated because they had two great Hall of Famers in Stockton and Malone. They had Jeff Hornacek, who's from LaGrange, and they still to this day have never won anything. And here's the Bulls. They had just made it 6 out of 8. Who knows? They might have even hit 7. But we'll never
probably
know, thanks to that jerk Hugh Hollins."
My goodness. I need a drink. I do.
Me too.
I want a bourbon so bad right now.
Not for because of that.
Gold member.
The guy he loves his frequent flyer miles, man.
And a $700 voucher. The people from Salt Lake were jealous. They didn't get a voucher, and they've never won anything since.
I'm a gold member.
What a colossal baby.
How about the idea of, "Hey, what's your top memory of the 98 Bulls?" And it starts with the last shot of Michael Jordan's Bulls career, and it ends with him at an airport getting a $700 voucher.
His travel plans. We got his entire itinerary. Yeah, that's what he remembers. And vividly, I mean, remarkably vividly. That's incredible stuff.
Thanks to that jerk Hugh Hollins.
Thanks to him. You're dropping names like Bob Newsom and Cheryl Ray Stout. Can Rory Spears be far behind?
It's a 10-hour documentary, right? Do you think, I mean, that how many hours would it need to be for that story from Les Grobstein make it into the documentary?
Yeah,
1,000?
Never happened. Yeah, keep going. Yeah, that's quite a thing.
It's really, really incredible. So you guys are there. I mean, did you leave right away? Did you get on that same flight with Les Grobstein? How are you? How is your flying member status?
How big was your voucher? I didn't get a big. I remember almost nothing about flight issues. Now I do remember the second Salt Lake City trip. If I can tell my travel plan story.
Sure, just like Les, you remember every detail.
Yeah, well, that was
member.
That was the trip where I loaned my wife Jill to Dan Patrick for the end of an evening, and she was on that trip with me, and my grandmother died, so I had to cut out one day early to make it to the funeral on a Friday afternoon in Elk Grove Village. But yeah, that was quite a thing. Mark Eaton's restaurant was where we all went. I remember having a huge meal, and I'm sure having to argue about the bill with program director Ron Gleason, because you know you wouldn't want to pick up the tab for Dan Patrick's, you know, lamb chops if he decides he's going to have dinner with you, or Rick Tellender, because we always went out in big groups whenever we were out on the road. We provided Dan with sanity because he was so uptight, such a tortured artist, and was still not Dan Patrick to the level he ascended to later than that. So he was uptight and used us for levity. So we'd go to restaurants on the road.
And, went out and had a great meal, just a great meal.
Had a great meal. Mark Eaton's restaurant, Mount Eaton. You probably don't remember him. He's a former Utah Jazz big man.
He had a restaurant?
Yes, he did.
Nice. Okay. Well, I'm sure that
was weird in Salt Lake City comparatively, Danny. They had weird liquor restrictions. You had to, if I remember it right, there were two things. You had to apply for a permit of some variety when you got there and show it any establishment. You had to show your permit. And as is the case in some states, they will not pour you a double. If you want an extra drink, they serve you this little airplane bottle of extra, and they make you pour it in yourself. I don't know what the point of that is. If you're going to have a double, you might as well just pour it for me. But that's how they did it in Utah.
Yeah, they still have weird liquor laws in Utah. It's not as restrictive as it was, but I was at a wedding in Utah a couple of years ago, 4 or 5 years ago now, I guess, at this point. And, like, you can't get a drink at a bar or restaurant or buy beer before 11:30. Like, the idea of 24-hour liquor is not a thing, even in convenience stores. There's pretty rigid restrictions on the amount of, like the alcohol by volume content for beer. It's got to be, like, the lesser, like, 3.2 or 3.4 yep. or something like that. And then they've got a couple of extra holidays where it's just like, oh, it's, you know, Utah Flag Appreciation Day, no liquor being sold today. Like, it's really weird things like that. It's an underrated weird state in our beloved union.
I wonder what keeping something verboten does for alcoholism rates there. I wonder if they're lower or if they're higher, because tell somebody he can't have something and that makes him want it that much more. I would be eager to see how that because I've felt for the last several years, whenever we talk about federal regulation for marijuana being required, if you're going to ever smoke it in some states illegally, including the one in which I live, Indiana. I think Indiana, probably a few Bible belted states in the South, and Utah would be among the last to ever ratify legal recreational use of marijuana. I can't see it happening in Utah or a couple states in the South. They'd probably have issues with that.
I mean, I think it'll be federal before each state comes on board.
Yeah,
it's right.
It'll have to be for some states because they ain't going to.
Yeah, exactly.
Do it.
It'll be like gay marriage. It'll be, you know, there'll it'll become federal before some of the states that are slower to social progress will catch up on that sort of thing. Yeah, so it'll be federal before these states go on. If we did a weird state draft, what would be your number one pick?
Well, I'd define weird.
However you want to define it. But, you know, like, Florida's pretty weird, as evidenced by their governor finally today doing the stay-at-home order but not including religious gatherings involved. There's some weirdness that happens in Utah, like we were just discussing. Arizona has a lot of conflict, I think, within the state. So there's, you know, that's how I would define weird.
You're required to have a gun in a restaurant in Arizona. That's pretty
right.
much how they work it there. Yeah, you have to have a gun to enter this establishment.
Pioneer Day. Boy. Thank you, Texter. Yes, in late July, Pioneer Day, you couldn't buy a cocktail. And it's in July, and that's when my buddy's wedding was. And they didn't know about Pioneer Day, but it was at a hotel, and they were serving their own booze, so they got around it. Like, we wanted to have cocktails before the wedding.
at the bar by like where we were staying off the premises of the hotel, and we couldn't find any liquor to save our life because of Pioneer Day in Utah.
Wow.
What a weird thing.
Yeah, it's a fairly pretty state. I enjoyed that element of it. I mean, Park City's not, you know, you got to go, I suppose, if you go to Salt Lake, you go up to Park City. It's very trendy and overpriced like most tourist traps, but I'm glad I saw it. Very pretty state. I don't think I would consider it the weirdest, but I don't know. I've been to a few states, but only that I thought were very foreign. And New Hampshire was something that I was not used to, but I don't know. It was just so country and windy, and it was pretty to look at, just not a lot of there, at least in my experience driving through New Hampshire. But I don't know if I would go so far as to say weird. Alabama kind of weird. Probably, yeah.
Never been.
Fellow tidesman, right. Had a blast at a game in Tuscaloosa a few years ago, even though I peed my pants. But, I enjoyed going to Bryant Dennehy Stadium to see the Tide play.
Our guest coming up next is Tom Thayer, and he was honestly he might have been the single inspiration for the Score Stories idea. I was doing a show solo recently. He came in for a transition before Bears All Access. We had like 8 minutes. There was a 3-minute, 4-minute commercial break. And in the commercial break, he was telling a story and just casually name dropped Frank Sinatra. And then before we came out of break, he was on to a story about Mike Tyson. He told both stories on the air. They were absolutely incredible. Tom Thayer, a treasure trove of story gems. He's going to tell them to us next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.